Chapter 11. Expected that they should have gone to work with them, have killed two or three of them the next morning, and perhaps have invited the donors to dinner. But having taken their leave, with all the respect and thanks that could well pass between people, where on either side they understood not one word they could say, they put off with their boat, and came back towards the first island, where, when they arrived, they set eight of their prisoners at liberty, there being too many of them for their occasion. In their voyage they endeavored to have some communication with their prisoners, but it was impossible to make them understand anything. Nothing they could say to them, or give them, or do for them, but was looked upon as going to murder them. They first of all unbound them, but the poor creatures screamed at that, especially the women, as if they had just felt the knife at their throats, for they immediately concluded they were unbound on purpose to be killed. If they gave them thing to eat, it was the same thing. They then concluded it was for fear they should sink in flesh, and so not be fat enough to kill. If they looked at one of them more particularly, the party presently concluded it was to see whether he or she was fattest and fittest to kill first. Nay, after they had brought them quite over, and began to use them kindly, and treat them well, still they expected every day to make a dinner or supper for their new masters. When the three wanderers had given this unaccountable history or journal of their voyage, the Spaniard asked them where their new family was, and being told that they had brought them on shore, and put them into one of their huts, and were come up to beg some victuals for them, they, the Spaniards, and the other two Englishmen, that is to say, the whole colony, resolved to go all down to the place and see them, and did so, and Friday's father with them. When they came into the hut, there they sat, all bound, for when they had brought them on shore they bound their hands, that they might not take the boat and make their escape. There, I say, they sat, all of them stark naked. First, there were three comely fellows, well shaped, with straight limbs, about 30 to 35 years of age, and five women, whereof two might be from 30 to 40, two more about 24 and 20. And the fifth, a tall comely maiden, about 17. The women were well favored agreeable persons, both in shape and features, only tawny, and two of them, had they been perfect white, would have passed for very handsome women, even in London, having pleasant countenances, and of a very modest behavior, especially when they came afterwards to be clothed and dressed, though that dress was very indifferent, it must be confessed. The sight, you may be sure, was something uncouth to our Spaniards, who were, to give them a just character, men of the most calm, sedate tempers, and perfect good humor, that ever I met with, and, in particular, of the utmost modesty. I say, the sight was very uncouth, to see three naked men and five naked women, all together bound, and in the most miserable circumstances that human nature could be supposed to be, viz., to be expecting every moment to be dragged out, and have their brains knocked out, and then to be eaten up like a calf that is killed for a dainty. The first thing they did was to cause the old Indian, Friday's father, to go in, and see first, if he knew any of them, and then if he understood any of their speech. As soon as the old man came in, he looked seriously at them, but knew none of them, neither could any of them understand a word he said, or a sign he could make, except one of the women. However, this was enough to answer the end, which was to satisfy them, that the men into whose hands they were fallen were Christians, that they abhorred eating men or women, and that they might be sure they would not be killed. As soon as they were assured of this, they discovered such a joy, and by such awkward gestures, several ways, as is hard to describe, for it seems they were of several nations. The woman who was their interpreter was bid, in the next place, to ask them if they were willing to be servants, and to work for the men who had brought them away, to save their lives. At which they all fell a dancing, and presently one fell to taking up this, and another that, anything that lay next, to carry on their shoulders, to intimate they were willing to work. The governor, who found that the having women among them would presently be attended with some inconvenience, and might occasion some strife, and perhaps blood, asked the three men what they intended to do with these women, and how they intended to use them, whether as servants or as wives. One of the Englishmen answered, very boldly and readily, that they would use them as both. To which the governor said, I am not going to restrain you from it, you are your own masters as to that. But this I think is but just, for avoiding disorders and quarrels among you, and I desire it of you for that reason only, viz. That you will all engage, that if any of you take any of these women as a wife, he shall take but one, and that having taken one, none else shall touch her. For though we cannot marry any one of you, yet it is but reasonable that, while you stay here, the woman any of you takes shall be maintained by the man that takes her, and should be his wife I mean, says he, while he continues here, and that none else shall have anything to do with her. All this appeared so just, that everyone agreed to it without any difficulty. Then the Englishman asked the Spaniards, if they designed to take any of them? But every one of them answered, no. Some of them said they had wives in Spain, and the others did not like women that were not Christians, and altogether declared that they would not touch one of them, which was an instance of such virtue as I have not met with in all my travels. On the other hand, the five Englishmen took them every one a wife, that is to say, a temporary wife, and so they set up a new form of living. For the Spaniards and Friday's father lived in my old habitation, which they had enlarged exceedingly within. The three servants which were taken in the last battle of the savages lived with them, and these carried on the main part of the colony, supplied all the rest with food, and assisted them in anything as they could, or as they found necessity required. But the wonder of the story was, how five such refractory, ill-matched fellows should agree about these women, and that some two of them should not choose the same woman, especially seeing two or three of them were, without comparison, more agreeable than the others. But they took a good way enough to prevent quarreling among themselves, for they set the five women by themselves in one of their huts, and they went all into the other hut, and drew lots among them who should choose first. Him that drew to choose first went away by himself to the hut, where the poor naked creatures were, and fetched out her he chose. And it was worth observing, that he that chose first took her that was reckoned the homeliest and oldest of the five, which made mirth enough amongst the rest, and even the Spaniards laughed at it. But the fellow considered better than any of them, that it was application and business they were to expect assistance in, as much as in anything else, and she proved the best wife of all the parcel. When the poor women saw themselves set in a row thus, and fetched out one by one, the terrors of their condition returned upon them again, and they firmly believed they were now going to be devoured. Accordingly, when the English sailor came in, and fetched out one of them, the rest set up a most lamentable cry, and hung about her, and took their leave of her with such agonies and affection as would have grieved the hardest heart in the world. Nor was it possible for the Englishmen to satisfy them, that they were not to be immediately murdered, till they fetched the old man, Friday's father, who immediately let them know that the five men, who were to fetch them out one by one, had chosen them for their wives. When they had done, and the fright the women were in was a little over, the men went to work, and the Spaniards came and helped them. And in a few hours they had built them every one a new hut or tent for their lodging apart, for those they had already were crowded with their tools, household stuff, and provisions. The three wicked ones had pitched farthest off, and the two honest ones nearer, but both on the north shore of the island, so that they continued separated as before, and thus my island was peopled in three places, and, as I might say, three towns were begun to be built. And here it is very well worth observing that, as it often happens in the world, what the wise ends in God's providence are, in such a disposition of things, I cannot say, the two honest fellows had the two worst wives, and the three reprobates, that were scarce worth hanging, that were fit for nothing, and neither seemed born to do themselves good nor anyone else, had three clever, careful, and ingenious wives. Not that the first two were bad wives, as to their temper or humor, for all the five were most willing, quiet, passive, and subjected creatures, rather like slaves than wives. But my meaning is, they were not alike capable, ingenious, or industrious, or alike cleanly and neat. Another observation I must make, to the honor of a diligent application on one hand, and to the disgrace of a slothful, negligent, idle temper on the other, that when I came to the place, and viewed the several improvements, plantings, and management of the several little colonies, the two men had so far outgone the three, that there was no comparison. They had, indeed, both of them as much ground laid out for corn as they wanted, and the reason was, because, according to my rule, nature dictated that it was to no purpose, to sow more corn than they wanted. But the difference of the cultivation, of the planting, of the fences, and indeed, of everything else, was easy to be seen at first view. The two men had innumerable young trees planted about their huts, so that, when you came to the place, nothing was to be seen but a wood. And though they had twice had their plantation demolished, once by their own countrymen, and once by the enemy, as shall be shown in its place, yet they had restored all again, and everything was thriving and flourishing about them. They had grapes planted in order, and managed like a vineyard, though they had themselves never seen anything of that kind. And by their good ordering their vines, their grapes were as good again as any of the others. They had also found themselves out a retreat in the thickest part of the woods, where, though there was not a natural cave, as I had found, yet they made one with incessant labor of their hands, and where, when the mischief which followed happened, they secured their wives and children so as they could never be found. They having, by sticking innumerable stakes and poles of the wood which, as I said, grew so readily, made the grove impassable, except in some places, when they climbed up to get over the outside part, and then went on by ways of their own leaving. As to the three reprobates, as I justly call them, though they were much civilized by their settlement compared to what they were before, and were not so quarrelsome, having not the same opportunity, yet one of the certain companions of a profligate mind never left them, and that was their idleness. It is true, they planted corn and made fences, but Solomon's words were never better verified than in them. I went by the vineyard of the slothful, and it was all overgrown with thorns: for, when the Spaniards came to view their crop they could not see it in some places for weeds. The hedge had several gaps in it, where the wild goats had got in, and eaten up the corn. Perhaps here and there a dead bush was crammed in, to stop them out for the present, but it was only shutting the stable door after the steed was stolen. Whereas, when they looked on the colony of the other two, there was the very face of industry and success upon all they did. There was not a weed to be seen in all their corn, or a gap in any of their hedges, and they, on the other hand, verified Solomon's words in another place, that the diligent hand maketh rich. For everything grew and thrived, and they had plenty within and without. They had more tame cattle than the others, more utensils and necessaries within doors, and yet more pleasure and diversion too. It is true, the wives of the three were very handy and cleanly within doors, and having learned the English ways of dressing and cooking from one of the other Englishmen, who, as I said, was a cook's mate on board the ship, they dressed their husband's victuals very nicely and well, whereas the others could not be brought to understand it. But then the husband, who, as I say, had been cook's mate, did it himself. But as for the husbands of the three wives, they loitered about, fetched turtles' eggs, and caught fish and birds. In a word, anything but labor, and they fared accordingly. The diligent lived well and comfortably, and the slothful hard and beggarly. And so, I believe, generally speaking, it is all over the world. But I now come to a scene different from all that had happened before, either to them or to me. And the origin of the story was this. Early one morning there came on shore five or six canoes of Indians or savages, call them which you please, and there is no room to doubt they came upon the old errand of feeding upon their slaves. But that part was now so familiar to the Spaniards, and to our men too, that they did not concern themselves about it, as I did. But having been made sensible, by their experience, that their only business was to lie concealed, and that if they were not seen by any of the savages they would go off again quietly, when their business was done, having as yet not the least notion of there being any inhabitants in the island. I say, having been made sensible of this, they had nothing to do, but to give notice to all the three plantations to keep within doors, and not show themselves, only placing a scout in a proper place, to give notice when the boats went to sea again. This was, without doubt, very right, but a disaster spoiled all these measures, and made it known among the savages, that there were inhabitants there, which was, in the end, the desolation of almost the whole colony. After the canoes with the savages were gone off, the Spaniards peeped abroad again, and some of them had the curiosity to go to the place where they had been, to see what they had been doing. Here, to their great surprise, they found three savages left behind, and lying fast asleep upon the ground. It was supposed they had either been so gorged with their inhuman feast, that, like beasts, they were fallen asleep, and would not stir when the others went, or they had wandered into the woods, and did not come back in time to be taken in. The Spaniards were greatly surprised at this sight, and perfectly at a loss what to do. The Spaniard governor, as it happened, was with them, and his advice was asked, but he professed he knew not what to do. As for slaves, they had enough already, and as to killing them, there were none of them inclined to do that. The Spaniard governor told me they could not think of shedding innocent blood, for as to them, the poor creatures had done them no wrong, invaded none of their property, and they thought they had no just quarrel against them, to take away their lives. And here I must, in justice to these Spaniards, observe that, let the accounts of Spanish cruelty in Mexico and Peru be what they will, I never met with 17 men of any nation whatsoever, in any foreign country, who were so universally modest, temperate, virtuous, so very good-humored, and so courteous, as these Spaniards. And as to cruelty, they had nothing of it in their very nature. No inhumanity, no barbarity, no outrageous passions, and yet all of them men of great courage and spirit. Their temper and calmness had appeared in their bearing the insufferable usage of the three Englishmen, and their justice and humanity appeared now in the case of the savages above. After some consultation they resolved upon this, that they would lie still a while longer, till, if possible, these three men might be gone. But then the governor recollected that the three savages had no boat, and if they were left to rove about the island, they would certainly discover that there were inhabitants in it, and so they should be undone that way. Upon this, they went back again, and there lay the fellows fast asleep still, and so they resolved to awaken them, and take them prisoners, and they did so. The poor fellows were strangely frightened, when they were seized upon and bound, and afraid, like the women, that they should be murdered and eaten. For it seems those people think all the world does as they do, in eating men's flesh, but they were soon made easy as to that, and away they carried them. It was very happy for them, that they did not carry them home to the castle, I mean to my palace under the hill, but they carried them first to the bower, where was the chief of their country work, such as the keeping the goats, the planting the corn, and ... and afterward they carried them to the habitation of the two Englishmen. Here they were set to work, though it was not much they had for them to do, and whether it was by negligence in guarding them, or that they thought the fellows could not mend themselves, I know not, but one of them ran away, and, taking to the woods, they could never hear of him any more. They had good reason to believe he got home again. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.